Blog Talk Radio.
We thought last week that we were maybe going to see. So what I thought we were going to see was some version of what we got here. I definitely saw the Jade turn coming because they laid on their friendship so thick. Thought that was probably going to happen. And I thought they probably won the championship so they could do this week. And at that point, then now they can write the women's tag team championships out of the show. I think that's what's probably going to happen. So, it's a bummer that they're just doing it seems like the company is just shedding themselves of these women's tag team championships at a time when they really could use them. I'm for fewer championships in general, but it seems like those are ones that should maybe stick around. They've gotten cut happy with championships over the last couple of years. But whatever, they did what they did. Or maybe they didn't do what they did. Maybe they're going to do a tournament. But I think the only reason they put them on these two was to break away from this. The match, hard to say if the match was anything at all because it was more an angle than anything. 9 minutes and 13 seconds, Mandy Rose retains. It was largely just a heat sequence because Roxanne Perez, had been attacked at the beginning of the show. And if you've seen any wrestling at all, just any at all, you already know it's Cora Jade, and they produce Vic to say, this has got Toxic Attraction written all over it. And I'm like, can you just let us even think that maybe it isn't Jade and that's just a red herring for a little while. But they didn't. They wanted it to be real, real obvious. Anyway, afterwards, Cora Jade allegedly breaks her skateboard over the back of, of Roxanne Perez. You know, if you gimmick a board too much, you're going to focus it right in the air. Focusing a board is what it's called when you break a board in half. Little bit of stuff I learned as a skate rat as a kid. So they wrote the skateboard out of this thing too, killed it off. It sleeps with the fishes a la Two Dimes. You got Cora Jade turning heel and doing her best acting as she made faces at Roxanne Perez. It was rough, folks, but I am willing to see where this goes with Cora Jade working heel. She seems like a really small person to be working heel for me. I don't know. I don't know about this, but her face act was stalling. So what else are you going to do? So this is one of the segments I have the most question marks on. I mean, I'm going to be generally positive tonight, but it is a little worrisome. And oh boy, that broken board. Bruce, who are you, and what did you think of the main event?
I'm Bruce Lee Hazelwood. I am the other reporter for 2.0, and I'll be reporting next week for the live report. I thought the main event was, like you said, it was just so heavily built around working the ribs of Roxanne Perez that it was kind of hard to really get into the match, especially because you're watching and you know the whole time that's all leading toward Cora Jade turning on and costing her the match. And when Roxanne Perez came out, I noted that WWE loves their stupid yet lion-hearted baby faces. They just love to go out there and show their determination and grit in the dumbest situations possible. And that was another thing tonight with Roxanne Perez. I doubt that because you said you're going to have it tonight, that they're going to take it away from you because you were attacked. Just things like that. So the match, again, just kind of hard to get into the post-match angle. I tweeted that either the board is already broken or Cora Jade has more grip strength than Randy Marsh with no internet. So those of you South Park fans will understand that reference. So it was rough. And it's interesting you brought up Jade's acting, because in my head, as I was watching this, I went, I still don't have any interest in Cora Jade. So it's very convoluted all around. It's interesting that with one company, we're saying that there's too many titles, and with this company, we're saying they're getting rid of too many titles. So it's weird how that goes in wrestling. And right now, it would be better for them to at least have another title to focus storylines on. Because as we've seen before in WWE, if there is no title, if there is no secondary or second women's championship within the program, then most women's storylines are going to be written out. So NXT has been better about that. So as you see with, you know, Lash Legend Nyla Fire, with Nikita Lyons before she was aiming at Mandy Rose and things like that. So there might be more. Tiffany Stratton and Wendy Chu, and Tiffany Stratton in general, now making her aim at the women's championship. But it's just more concerning for the women's division overall if the titles do indeed go away, because presumably now they're going to be vacated.
And Nate, what about you?
All right, at Nate Lindberg on Twitter. I do the NXT hits and misses, which I do have up on pwtorch.com for you guys tonight. And also, if you didn't hear it yesterday, I did do Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show with Zach Haydorn filling in for Wade after Raw. So check it out if you haven't. But on the main event tonight. So yeah, convoluted. I'm going to be completely honest. I'm an idiot. I didn't see it coming. I didn't think it was Toxic Attraction that beat down Perez earlier in the night, but I was trying to think, like, who could it have been? And Toxic Attraction makes the most sense. Like, Cora Jade sort of went through my head, but, like, I wasn't sold on it, like, at all, really. I kind of figured, all right, they just became tag champs. They wouldn't do that right now. So I actually didn't see it coming. I'm not going to lie. Once it happened, I was like, all right, yeah, okay, I guess, you know, foreshadowing and whatnot. But at the same time, you know, I didn't really see it coming. I think I'm kind of somewhat bullish on this. I'm not sure. We're still only about a half hour removed from the main event here, and I'm still kind of thinking about it. But I didn't think it was time for Mandy Rose to lose her title, which is a sentence I never thought I would say. I don't think it's necessarily time yet. I don't think Perez or Jade are in a position to actually be champion. I talked about that a little bit with Zach last night, where, you know, they are kind of just still new to the company, still kind of getting their feet wet, especially Cora Jade. Roxanne Perez, I mean, at least, you know, she had a little bit more, you know, training and whatnot, but especially Cora Jade here. When Cora Jade turned and she got in the ring and she tried breaking the board over everything, I kind of was a little intrigued by it. I'm not sure how she's going to be as a heel, but she didn't suck as a heel tonight. I mean, she had a mean look on her face. She was kind of, shrieking as she was, attacking Roxanne Perez, which I think is all right. I mean, I mean,
the face, I expect her to be like, grr, rawr, I'm a monster.
Yeah, but it
was a little overwrought.
It was. But, we know she doesn't have the greatest acting ability in the world. I don't think it was terrible. At least I don't, anyway. I'm going to kind of wait and see what happens here and how they wind up booking this and where this really goes before I kind of pass a final judgment on it. But I wasn't really that down on it. I'm kind of intrigued to see where this goes. I do agree that Cora Jade's act was starting to get a bit stale. I feel like it was kind of stale for me almost as it started. I just kind of felt like they were almost trying to reinvent the old version of Bayley, the NXT version of Bayley, and to a degree, a little bit different. She wasn't quite as, you know, lovable and huggable and all of that, but still, like, just kind of, some of the kind of the same trajectory and kind of a similar character. It really hadn't been working for me. I don't think it was working for any of us, really, at least on this show. So I'm kind of intrigued to see where this goes and see how, you know, she can handle being a heel. Like you said, her size does definitely play against her as a heel. However, Sasha Banks, I mean, she was only, what, 5'1", 5'2", and you know, probably 100 pounds soaking wet. And, you know, she's been able to play a pretty good heel in the past. So size definitely is a factor, but it's not an end all be all really. I think, you know, as long as you get the right person in the position, they can do it. Whether or not Cora Jade is the right person, well, we'll find out.
Yeah, Sasha can't act either.
I just hope you're ready for Nikita Lyons as champion.
I know. Who else is it? I mean, that's the baby face they're working toward.
It's going to be Lyons. It's going to be Lyons.
Yeah.
I hate to say it, but.
As always, exactly. Nate, appreciate the counterpoint, in this case being the only person anywhere who did not see this heel turn coming.
Well, okay. As I said to you guys off air, I got 2 hours of sleep last night. I'm surprised I'm even still conscious.
Yeah. Tomorrow morning, you're going to be like, did that heel turn happen?
I might have that.
It was a whole fever dream.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? You're going to wake up and be like, did Nikita Lyons give a kind of good promo? That can't be right. Okay. You can call us 515-605-9345, or you can email us pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. I am going to go to Ryan from Cumberland. And Ryan, if you can hear me, go ahead and say hey.
Hello, I can hear you.
All right, sounds good to me. I kind of didn't hate this week's show. What did you think?
It was a fine show. It was a little heavy on the ladies, and I don't really mind that.
All right. Yeah, I thought that most of that went well. Almost all of it went well. Go ahead.
Yeah, first question is on Indy Hartwell. Do you think she meant to do that thing off the rope where she fell off the rope, but then she did like the roll up on her opponent, Lash Legend? It's reminding me a little bit of like when Brock Lesnar slipped on the ropes and Kurt Angle tried to make the pin real fast. I don't know if her experience level was that high enough to pull that off, if that was a screw-up.
I definitely think that was a mistake, her falling off. I mean, she's got a top rope move there. I don't think it could be anything but that. That match had a couple of miscues. The two just weren't matching up. The other two bigger issues were Legend falling out of the ring in an extremely graceless way, and then on a inside the ring as well that I can't remember now, but I kind of forgot all of it. After Indy set up her, I mean, she walks just like one or two steps to go old school and then jumps, and she just straight planted, and it's you're just glad that this one wasn't on pay-per-view like Scott Steiner was at Bad Blood. So people are going back to this match over and over. Also, that one was way funnier. Plus, it was Scott Steiner, which made it extremely funny. Anyway, it's really too bad. I've kind of defended Indy. I know that we've got callers that aren't like, I know Sean's not big on her, and I've kind of pushed back, like not a lot. Like I'm not going to die on the hill of Indy Hartwell, but I think she's fine. I think she has been fine, but this was really bad. And at a time when NXT is about the churn, I think there's a real question about how bad can a performance be and you can still slip through the cracks when they say they're going to churn through people. And if you're not showing immediate improvement, then you're gone. But on the other hand, and I'm just sorry to single her out, I always do, but up to last week, Nikita Lyons was showing no improvement in any significant way, not in any part of her act. But if the train's behind you, it doesn't matter. It seems like it doesn't matter if you're not showing improvement. If they want to push you, they're just going to do it. With Harland being a potential exception, although his hadn't started, we just knew it was coming. And then instead of starting that push, they just got rid of him. So potentially off the rails here. But since we are talking about this match, I did think we would end up talking about this match first, unfortunately, after the main event. It was Indy Hartwell over Lash Legend at 3:43. I think they made the best they could out of what happened. I mean, outside of repeating the spot, which just is a bigger acknowledgement of the mistake that just happened, I guess the roll-up is probably the best they could do, but it's really tough when Lash is in there and she doesn't – I mean, she didn't expect she would be in this position, and she's got to suddenly think on her feet in a way that she doesn't have the reps to do. I just think it was a real bad thing that happened, and I kind of dread the potential repercussions, Nate.
Yeah. The match itself wasn't great, wasn't bad. The botch at the end, I feel like was definitely a botch. But I don't think they didn't do a super fantastic job of of saving it. But they did sort of try and save it. I don't know exactly what she was trying to do, whether she's going for like a splash or something like that off the top rope. But certainly slipped and fell is what it looked like to me. She did a decent job trying to save it, roll her up and, get the win that way. And I think it was kind of nice too, with Wade Barrett kind of acknowledging it on commentary. Like, she didn't get the win the way she wanted to get the win, but at least she got the win. So, there's that. One thing, and I want to say it was Jericho that said this recently, and I read it somewhere online. I don't remember where, but basically talking about how, like, us wrestling fans always get up in arms whenever there's a botch, and, wrestling's not always, wrestling isn't pretty, and wrestling isn't pretty. When there is a botch like that, it almost kind of adds, like, or at least, what he was saying, like, adds a layer of realism to the match. And I don't know. I'm trying to start to look at botches through that lens, because, like, so often a botch will take me out of a match, and just like that's all I can think about is, what happened there? Whose fault was that? Whereas, like, in an actual fight, like, you watch an MMA fight or something like that, like, it's not pretty. It's really not. And moves don't look crisp and clean all the time. As long as they're effective, that's what matters. Now, granted, this move wasn't effective. I mean, she hit the mat, but still, it was, she did a decent job trying to clean it up. Lash Legend, she's certainly coming along. I think tonight she may have actually, like, officially won me over. Her promo before the match, I thought was excellent. Probably the best one she's given so far. Where she's dribbling the basketball and everything. I feel like the delivery was great. The content of what she was saying was great. And I believed that those were, like, her words. Like, she was not reading off a teleprompter. She's not reading reciting memorized lines. Like, it sounded like it was coming from her. Now, granted, there probably were memorized lines, but the way that she delivered them was actually really, really good. And kind of contrast that, I always compare her to Nikita Lyons, simply because they have similar style, very similar size and whatnot. And they're kind of trying to book them in the same, not necessarily in the same way, because of booking Lyons, obviously pushing her a little bit harder, but in terms of kind of like them being, big monster type, characters or whatever. And we've said it before and I'll say it again. I mean, Lash Legend is like light years ahead of Nikita Lyons at this point. I feel like both in the ring as well as on the mic. If you were to get two of them in like a promo battle, some sort of like a rap battle type of deal, right? Nikita Lyons couldn't hold a candle to Lash Legend right now. So, overall, I thought this was it was an okay match. They did what they could to try and save it at the end. We'll kind of see what happens from here with Indy. Ever since she lost everybody that she was associated with, either due to pregnancy or getting future endeavored or whatnot, she's kind of sort of been floundering. So I want to see some sort of redemption for Indy. I'd love to see her maybe even get, in the main event, you get in the title picture at some point too. Like, that'd be great. We'll see what the future holds for both Indy and Lash Legend.
Okay. Ryan, go ahead.
My second question is on Apollo Crews. Can you see Commander Aziz coming to NXT to feud with Apollo, since he might be upset that he sort of like this forgot all about him?
I had not thought about that, and they have not to this point brought anybody from the main roster, like a feud that could be main roster, to the NXT roster before, but it's not like Aziz is some kind of dynamo in there, so maybe there's a purpose to bring him down for that kind of seasoning. I think I would bet against it, but I'm surprised I didn't just say outright no. I guess I could see that. I don't know what his situation is right now. To be honest, I'd be surprised to see him on TV again at all. But they haven't acknowledged any firing of him.
I want to say there's a repackage in the future for him.
Okay.
Because this is something I have actually thought about. We didn't actually talk about it on air last night on the Wade Keller Perez and Post show, but I forget, we started talking about Omos and, you know, anybody in the company that, you know, could potentially kind of hold a stick to him. And Commander Aziz came to mind. I didn't necessarily verbalize it, but he came to mind, and I started thinking about it. I'm like, what are they going to do with him now that Apollo Crews is on the main roster? And the only thing that I can think of is it's got to be some sort of a repackage. I don't feel like they'd bring him down to NXT to feud with Apollo Crews, because why? There's a lot of other talent on NXT that really should be showcased rather than bringing two main roster stars down to NXT to feud. I think if he did show back up in NXT, it would be under, you know, some sort of a repackage or something. But I have a feeling he's probably going to stay on the main roster with the repackage, or he's going to wind up being, you know, one of the next people cut during, you know, those inevitable mass layoffs that seem to happen like twice a year. But that's kind of what I'm thinking. I think it's going to be some sort of a repackage.
Bruce?
I think it's more likely that Babatunde, Commander Aziz, is released and he's brought back on TV. And when it comes to Crews, I'd actually rather talk about Giovanni Vinci, so I'll save my comments for then.
Well, let's do that now since we're there. 12 minutes and 8 seconds, Giovanni Vinci beats Apollo Crews in, I think, inarguably the best match on the show.
Yeah,
this was fun from the beginning with, I'm not sure I'm totally all in on the photo entrance yet, but it seems like they've been doing it a little better every time. And this time with Wade adding the kissy face model pose along with the regular pose from Vinci, I just loved it. I loved it.
All like, what the hell's going on over here?
Yes, of course, which is Vic's natural state of being, is like having no idea. He's just looking around like, is it time for me to yell flying through the air? They're like, no, Vic, it's not. But Giovanni Vinci defeats Apollo Crews, 12 minutes and 8 seconds. Spirited action here. Doesn't seem like either one is really in a position to be taking losses, because we got like a newfound, we assume, a push for Apollo Crews, but certainly a new character for him again. And Vinci, of course, just still getting his wings, even though, again, he's been here for 6 years. But this could be a relatively short stay on this roster for him. That is what I'm predicting right now. Should be noted, I am wrong about these things every time. So
Daniel Bryan showed up tonight.
So take yes. And I didn't even know if he would tie up any loose ends. But he is in another feud that I think he'll lose. So maybe that's when it happens. I don't know. So
we'll
anyway, yeah, just like, he's going up, guys. I promise. So Vinci is your winner when Zion Quinn jumps the railing. You know why kind of hide who you are if you can't see by the referee whether he knows who you are or not? I don't know why the hoodie, but whatever. Zion Quinn gonna Zion Quinn. I am liking what they are doing with Zion Quinn for literally the first time. I think a heel is exactly where he has to be. And, I think kind of being ratty in this sort of position, it's what I want from him. I thought everything here was done very well. There you go. Another win for Vinci, either moving him up the card or moving him up to the main roster. Bruce, on the match.
So quickly on the match, it was a good match. Nice, good action, which you would expect from these two. So this tonight is where the snapshot gimmick won me over, and it's because of what happened actually during the match. While it was kind of, again, a little predictable because it was so obviously a plant, but the spot with the fan outside the ring with Vinci, where he grabbed the phone because the fan got a little too close and was trying to take a picture of the guy who likes to take his, or like to have his picture taken, but as someone who leans heel, doesn't like his picture taken in spots where he doesn't want it taken. I think that's what won me over on the little snapshot gimmick, because it really feeds into that side of the character of someone thinking they're all that, but then hating when they're in spots where they're shown to not be kind of at that elite tier 24/7, I guess. So I think that for that part, it won me over. His powerbomb is still just a very, very nice thing to see. What was the other thing I was going to say? The white tights. So when he came out wearing the white, I was like, oh, this looks like Triple H in the mid-2000s. So it's interesting when you see someone coming out in all white, just because it's one of those that stands out, but there aren't many people in recent memory where you can think of, oh, they were all white and they were very successful. Like, I think the last person I remember wearing all white in NXT was Dan Matha. And so that's just a little observation there.
Yeah, I can shed a little light on that. Once upon a time, talked to a couple of backstage people at NXT, and everyone liked Dan Matha, but they were like, he might be the dumbest guy I've ever met. Like, straight up, just dumbest dude ever. So I was never going to say that on the show, but he's been
cut the words out of my mouth for long.
What did Bruce say?
He's even dumber than Wagner?
Oh, boy. I know what? I'm going to have to talk to these two people again to see what they think. Those two plants in the front, their acting was so bad. It's like they went to an acting class taught by Cora Jade. And so they came out worse than they possibly could have been. My favorite terminology, a friend of mine said this years ago, and I've said it ever since, I've seen better acting and tough acting than acting. That's my favorite acting trope. Already I was just irritated by the overexcited guy. But yeah, the guy next to him, like, chewing it, like, acting is moving your arms around a lot, right? I mean, you know, pointing at things that everybody's already looking at, that's acting. Yikes. But whatever. Let's not linger on them. They're not part of the show. Nate, on the opening match.
All right. So I kind of dug the opening match. As you said, Apollo Crews and I keep wanting to call him Fabian Aichner, Giovanni Da Vinci, or Vinci, we got D'Angelo Vinci. On paper, like, that is, I don't want to say necessarily a dream match, but it's a pretty damn good match. They've got a very similar style. And I think they went out there and they kind of killed it tonight. You know, we're used to seeing, especially in NXT 2.0, we're used to seeing a lot of developmental talent in the ring, where they're green, they're still learning. So this is kind of refreshing to see like two veterans get in there and mix it up. And, you know, it was a great opening match. I'm going to talk about Vinci in a second, but I'm really curious to see what is going on with Apollo Crews, because you think about like AJ Styles, Natalya, they've come down NXT 2.0. They had a very clear cut reason for being there. And then once that reason had been taken care of, once that feud and that angle had been buttoned up, they were gone. And so far he hasn't really had any sort of clear direction. I mean, he cut a promo saying that, you know, he wants to do this. He wants to do this. He wants to do this. He wants to, you know, go after the NXT title. Then he had a vignette saying he's a vigilante. And then, you know, now, so it's like there's no clear direction really for Apollo Crews right now. So it's like is he down in NXT for good? Is he just down in NXT for now? And, you know, maybe he'll go back up eventually. Is he just going to have maybe a little bit of a longer stint than AJ and Natty had? That's, you know, I'm kind of curious. I'm really kind of curious to see where they go with Apollo Crews. I mean, a big fan, like, you know, his mic work has certainly improved, but in the ring, like, he's fantastic. So really curious to see how they wind up booking Apollo Crews going forward. If he winds up in the NXT title scene, you know, up against Bron Breakker or whatnot, you know, but we'll obviously see, you know, see how that plays out as time goes on with Giovanni Vinci. So I'm not completely sold on the character yet, but I'm getting there. You know, when he first started to debut, I was like, he reminded me of somebody and I couldn't put my finger on it until tonight when Wade Barrett said that Giovanni Vinci is pound for pound the strongest wrestler in NXT. And I'm like, oh my God.
Oh, that was a good spot. We should talk about that spot.
Yeah. I'm like, oh my God, he's Cesaro. Like they're trying, he's basically trying to play Cesaro. To a different, you know, a little bit of a different degree, but I mean, you know, thinking about suit wearing Cesaro, and it kind of matches up. You know, there's obviously some differences. You know, Vinci seems like he's a bit more of like a ladies' man, and you know, playing to the camera with those cheesy poses, which I absolutely love. By the way, I thought those are fantastic. But yeah, like he really kind of reminds me of like almost like Cesaro mixed with like a dash of Tony D'Angelo, yeah, with the Italian thing going on there. But and I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I think, you know, it's certainly not. Definitely something worth at least pointing out, I think. I want to see a little bit more character work out of him first before I kind of like I said, I'm almost sold on the character, almost there. But I think I want to see some more, you know, promos or, you know, him in some sort of like a, you know, backstage segment or something like that. Obviously he's still, you know, the character's still pretty new. They have plenty of time to flesh him out a little bit. Yeah, I'm high on it. I'm definitely high on it. I'm not sold 100% on the character. 'Cause like, I feel like with his character, if they book him correctly, he could be, you know, easily be like an upper mid card star, right? If not, I could easily see that gimmick just floundering around the mid to lower mid card and really not getting him anywhere. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see obviously where that goes, where it pans out. But overall was a decent opening segment.
So Crews flies at Vinci. And Vinci, the spot is for Vinci to just catch him and hold him up for a delayed suplex. And of course, Crews is a large man who weighs something, and he's flying at him through the air, like with a ton of momentum. And so, of course, naturally, it's enough weight that Vinci can't hold him right away. But he doesn't go all the way down, and he just deadlifts him back, reverses momentum with a very large man, larger than him, in his arms, holds him up and hits the delayed suplex anyway. That is just a stupid amount of power. I can't even get my head around it. It was awesome. And yeah, I am actually fairly sold on this character, I think. We haven't seen a lot of character work. I am not sold on the name Giovanni Vinci. It just seems like they gave him the Italian version of like Dave Smith.
I mean, you've got Tony D'Angelo, which is a super generic Italian name, and Giovanni Vinci, which is a super generic Italian name. So I'm right there with you.
Yep. Yep. That's what they do. Ryan, go ahead.
I have a question on the Jensen Briggs Pretty Deadly segment in the bar. When you see these segments that are like outside of the NXT arena, do you like recognize these places, or have you ever been to these places, since you seem to live pretty close by to the arena?
Well, Tom lives close to the arena, and Tom would know this bar almost certainly. I have been to some of the places around there because I was down in Orlando, and since I was there, of course, I visited Tom, and we hung out and we went to some of those places. It was not a show night, Unfortunately, I wasn't there over a Tuesday, so I didn't go. I would not be surprised if Tom knew this place. He knows, like, at Full Sail University, he knows all those places. He went there. So he could say, oh, yeah, that's a room in the building. Or when – this is going way back, but on the segments where Bray Wyatt and his dudes, they're, like, out in the bayou. He was like, yeah, that's about not even a quarter mile away from the building. Like it's an area with trees, and it's a small amount of trees, but it works if you just keep your shots in tight. So I went to one bar down there, and it wasn't like a Southern Boy bar. That's not. So my jam, that's probably obvious, but that's not where I went, although I think I saw a scene from that bar. And I've certainly seen like some of those fronts of those houses that they've used that the wrestlers probably do actually live in, where they have people knocking on doors and stuff like that in their backyards with Adam Cole. Like I know that area. Unfortunately, I don't know this bar, or I'd tell you about it. Either of you spend enough time in Orlando to know?
I was 15 the last time I was in Orlando, so I wasn't going anywhere near bars.
And Bruce, you're about as far from Florida as you could possibly be. I mean, I guess Bruce is going to...
Bruce is pulling a Nate, and he's muted.
There you go.
Thank goodness that I am far away from Florida in the beautiful state of Hawaii.
Yes, indeed. So, I'll ask Tom about that on my 8 years back podcast tomorrow, because now I'm curious if that's a bar that he's passed through. One more, Ryan, if you got it.
My final question is, you're not to agree with this statement I'm going to make, but I think Bron Breakker might be the most intelligent person on this roster because he's college educated and his family, Scott, owned a business and Rick was a real estate agent, which he can't be really a dummy. So if he isn't the smartest, who is the smartest guy or girl on this roster right now?
I don't think there's any chance that Bron Breakker is the most intelligent, natural human being in that company, but I do think that pro wrestling smarts, he's probably very long on. I think that it's, if you talk to somebody about the nature of the business and things like that, he definitely is probably that. And I would say the same thing about Rick Steiner. And Rick, as a real estate agent, the thing he had to be more than anything else was a salesman. And I was I still am kind of a salesman, but I'm more of a manager now. But I was a retail salesman, like of high end stuff for 15 years. And brains can get you far, but they can't get you to the finish line. The only guy who I was ever at a store with that consistently outsold me, and there was only one, was not all that bright a guy, but he was extremely good with double speak and with sales and things like that. And I mean, Rick Steiner was very much in a business for many years where you got to sell stuff. So I wouldn't take Bron for natural brains, but I think that it's very, very possible that he is one of the more intelligent wrestling minds on the roster. As far as who jumps out at me as somebody who might be more naturally intelligent, whether that comes through in the words they say or their competence level or a lot of things like that, I will throw a few names at you. Carmelo Hayes, Duke Hudson, there aren't a lot, and I'm sad to say that.
I'm going to throw Grimes in there.
I was going to say Grimes next. I think that's possible.
But you are missing the smartest of them all.
Well, I know that I haven't said Kayla Inlay yet, the smart character.
That's not even where I'm going. I'm saying Andre Chase. He owns an entire university.
That's true. I think that's possible.
Bodie Hayward.
I think that's possible. Yes, not Bodie. But I think Andre is potentially true. I think maybe Sanga, but they don't show that side of him. I'd be real interested to find out. Robert Stone, potentially. Alba Fire, maybe.
Vaughn, what not?
Stop. You
Brooks
stop.
Jensen. Brooks Jensen.
Stop. There's no. I think that I covered everyone that I want to cover. It would be real fun to sit down with a bunch of NXT wrestlers again and find out, because everybody I met is not there anymore. So it's time. Bruce, who did I miss?
Well, I'm thinking the obvious one that you missed, let me just say first, having a degree or degrees doesn't really mean anything, because, I mean, look at me. I have two bachelors and a PhD, and I'm dumb as rocks. So,
I don't have a single one, and I'm super intelligent.
Well, you see, having a degree doesn't mean anything. I just happened to get them at a certain time, and look at me now. I am sitting here doing a wrestling podcast. So that's what those degrees will get you. I think based off what we're told, Thea Hale, maybe, is intelligent. Smart, intelligent? I don't know. But I think you set them, I mean, obviously the big choice, the one that you forgot, because I know they're your favorite, is Nikita Lyons. But
I knew you were going to do that to me, and I just hoped that it didn't happen. Nate, anyone else?
The only other one that kind of – so, like, I'm looking up and down the roster right now. And I'm sure there are plenty of intelligent people in the business, but in terms of like what sticks out to me is maybe Grayson Waller. He's very articulate, and
yeah, sure.
he seems like he at least has a good vocabulary anyway. But yeah, I think, you know, we pretty much touched on everybody else that at least stands out as somebody that, you know, could potentially be Chase U valedictorian.
Actually, I think the answer is probably Wade Barrett.
You're probably right. Right.
Wouldn't be surprised by Mackenzie Mitchell either. Would be real surprised by Vic.
I don't think I would be.
Here we go.
Speaking of Vic, real quick, in during the last Legend match, when she got distracted, he goes, anyone would have been distracted at that moment right there. And I just said, no, Vic, nobody would have been distracted at that moment right there. Not at all.
Yep. Okay. Well, let's go to Sean. Sean, thanks for your patience, friend.
Oh, no problem.
On the show tonight?
It was pretty good. Actually, I was spending all that time searching for the song. When you guys said that Giovanni is Cesaro, and I always thought that that's who they was making him. They were remaking Cesaro. Cesaro got Dean Malenko's old theme. And that old theme is a Gladys Knight cover of License to Kill from the Bond movie. So that's going to be the song he gets when he goes to the main roster. He's going to be the third person to get that Dean Malenko song, or the second person. So, yeah, I needed all that time to do that.
All right. I hate that this happened, but my feed went out a little bit right at the beginning of what you said, so I missed it. So
that's all right.
When else was this used?
Dean Malenko. Yep. That was Dean Malenko's thing when he first got to WWE. Then they gave it to Cesaro, the exact same music, but it's just a sped up version of License to Kill, the cover, the Gladys Knight cover from the 80s.
Why did I ever notice that? I can't believe I didn't know that.
You knew it in the back of your head, but you couldn't pinpoint where it was from. Remember Cesaro had that Oksana, was that her name? He had a manager?
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
Didn't she marry Teddy Long?
She married Teddy Long, did you say?
Not in real life. Maybe in real life. I don't know. But like, no, right? Hey, man, it's hard to tell. Let's be for real.
Yeah.
It's really difficult to tell.
I think we all need some
like, Tori Wilson married Billy Kidman.
Yeah, right.
I didn't know that was a thing. Right.
Yep.
No, but the show was great. So much. Off the bat, I want to ask a tough question. I'm just going to go there tonight. Whether it was right for, you know, they say the road to hell is paved with good intentions. It just means be careful of what you do no matter whether you want to do good or not. You still might be hurting someone else. Did Sasha Banks and what she did that take away the tag titles for the entire company for women?
No, Vince McMahon being an asshole took it away from the women.
I will say that situation, which we will continue to learn more about, possibly, or we will just be filled with so much noise that we know less about it than we did at the beginning. And that's what will happen. We will be given the spin by everyone involved a lot. But I would say I agree with the statement as far as did that situation kill the tag team championships for women in the company? Yes. I do think that the situation, however it went down, is responsible for the demise of the tag team championships, Bruce.
Yeah, but it's funny how there's always a separation between NXT and then Raw and SmackDown, but then this has a trickle-down effect that we're kind of implying. It just I guess from Sasha Banks and Naomi's standpoint, from what we've been able to gather, it was more important for them to take a stand than to keep being put in crappy storylines, even if that meant the tag team titles were there. How that has an effect on the NXT Women's Champion Tag Team Championships is a bit, I think, Charlie Day-ish to me, but I do think that there is some validity to thinking that. I just think that it's in the macro. So overall, it's more just along the fact that this company, regardless of whether it's the men's tag teams or women's tag teams, really doesn't give a crap about tag teams. And it just keeps manifesting itself over and over again throughout the years. So I'm not looking to place the blame on Sasha Banks and Naomi. I think this is just a macro issue that manifested itself within this one circumstance that has become so overblown to a certain extent. So,
Nate, any comment on it, or you can run away screaming from this conversation? And
you know,
he runs away screaming.
I actually did, and I was muted. I might have woken somebody up, though. I don't know. We'll see. So anyway, it's tough because the women's on you know, the main roster, the women's tag division, I mean, God, it was a joke. It really was. It wasn't always. You know, I mean, when Sasha and Bayley won the titles, like it was great. Like I thought I had a lot of hope for women's tag wrestling and tag wrestling in general at that point. But I mean, as time went on, they didn't mean anything. I think that it might have just been like a perfect storm. They were probably trying to think – they might have been thinking about getting rid of them anyway, and then Sasha and Naomi did what they did, and they're like, all right, well, here we go. Now we just can get rid of them. That's at least kind of my two cents on it anyway. And then I think if that is the case and they're doing away with the women's tag titles on the main roster – then, well, why would you have women's tag titles in your undercard? Is probably the line of thinking they've got. So, you know, then maybe they're going to use this angle to get rid of the women's tag titles down in NXT. So that's kind of at least what I'm thinking anyway. But, you know, I'm still kind of holding on to hope that those two titles, you know, the NXT and WWE tag titles wind up sticking around. Yeah, I know there's already 1.5 million different titles in this company, but I don't know. I think if you're going to have a men's tag division, then I don't know. I think it's only fair to have a women's tag division, but they definitely need to pay more attention to it. Like big time, big time.
The fact that Toxic Attraction had an obvious moment to talk about the tag team championships and getting them back tonight and didn't do so, to me, was a big clue.
Yeah, you know, all right, that's a good point. That's a good point.
Go ahead, Sean.
I think that here's the thing about the tag team titles. At any given point in time, I think that the guys you put them on, you trust so much that the titles themselves are bulletproof because of the people wearing them. And that you just, there's no reason to focus on them. It's like if I say, Dean Malenko, go out and have a great 20-minute match with anybody. Like, do you care whether or not? You're not going to be looking at it and tell them, hey, you should have done this, this, and that. I think it's more so of a oversight, like a gross. Look at the Usos. Look at the New Day. Look at guys that can put them on. They're like, oh, they're safe. And the stupid part is they say, well, we don't need to book them right anymore because they know what they're doing, you know. Clearly they don't do that all the time, but I think that they believe those titles are so bulletproof that whoever has them is so safe that they just don't care about how they book them. I mean, like I said, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. The intentions may be good in saying, oh, the Usos could have a title forever. Who cares? It's just that everything else gets stale along with it because you didn't care whether, you know, the Usos had – great competition. I'm just using them as an example because there's times where they use the tag titles well, like right now with the Usos and with RK-Bro and the Usos and even New Day, they've been at the top of the cards with the tag titles. So it's not like they're always garbage to them. So if they're not always garbage, I think it's more so of a, what are they always trying to get over? If the tag titles are something they feel like are over on their own because of who's holding them, then they're never going to pay attention to them. Just like now, they don't care that – I don't know what they're doing now. But I would say the same with the WWE title and the Universal title. Put it on Roman and get every – we got to get these other guys over right now. Because Roman's got it, let Roman and the Usos deal with it. That's why they're kind of getting a little stale, too. I'm sorry, go ahead.
The tag team titles have only been at the top of the card because the top of the card champion has been gone for most of the time. That's the only reason. The tag teams don't matter. You can look at RK-Bro and the Usos recently, but, you know, a year and a half, maybe 2 years, to a couple decades of experience or history, I think is a bit short-sighted. And then if you want to look at the Usos and New Day, for example, as you brought up, it took how many years before they became the acts that became top-of-the-card acts? So it's something that they have to actually work and build on, which they're not doing.
True. But then you got Team Hell No. You got the Rock and Sock Connection. You got, well, I don't want to bring up Stone Cold and Triple H at them. But you know what I mean? Like they... the way they use them.
And what you're bringing up are tag teams that were all put together with singles wrestlers instead of actual tag teams. Not just singles wrestlers, but top of the card singles wrestlers. So I think, again, I think using those examples is a bit.
I just meant they use them as launching.
It fails to grasp the whole picture.
Yeah. They also use them as launching points, too. Like, you know, you want to make Shawn Michaels, use Marty Jannetty. You know what I'm saying? Like, they could do that as well. They even used it, nowhere near in the same way, but they used it with Kofi. They used his tag team and him. They used that in a unique way, which they'll probably never be able to do again. But they also use them as jumping out points when somebody breaks away from that tag team. And they're going to do that with Montez Ford and Angelo Dawkins. So I think that's the biggest, you know. They even use Jey Uso, you know, as him being a tag team legend to go up against Roman Reigns. I just think that it's negligence no matter what, whether it's for what I say or what anyone else says. It's just I think that the negligence comes with, oh, we don't need to book it like that because it's fine. You know, it's just weird to me that they always think that it's fine. I for one will say I don't think the women's tag division in NXT was any good since Indy Hartwell had that belt on her. And she kind of proved it tonight. Yeah, I want to throw a little dirt at her, so what? But I don't think the title picture was good because That I actually don't think they care about the NXT women's tag team title. Those I don't think they cared about because they didn't. They just didn't do anything. They didn't say, oh, they're safe with this person or with that person. Not like what they did with Imperium or with Undisputed Era.
Go ahead, Nate. Yeah, Nate might be muted again.
Go ahead and throw to Bruce. I have a problem with my headset.
Oh, fun. Bruce, anything further on that?
No, go ahead, Kelly.
Okay. Oh, man, it's amazing how much we've talked about the nature of tag teams on this and every podcast I've done on this in this place. And it just goes back to basically the moment that I heard Vince's thoughts on it were, why should I want to pay four guys for a match when I can just pay two? That to me is like, it's admission that it's not only not going to get better, but he has no intent to feel better. And I never thought about it in those terms before I heard that quote, but I think that's a little short-sighted in that.
Storytelling's easy too. You got two guys who work together all the time. It's too easy. It writes itself. Vince McMahon doesn't have to babysit that. But, like, when you got to make a guy like The Rock, which he clearly messed up, and Roman Reigns, he messed up. The Rock was getting death threats. You screwed up, man. Whatever you did worked in the opposite way that you thought it did. You know, when he's, you know, so when you put a tag team out there, it's just a little different. I wouldn't worry nearly as much about, like, you wouldn't worry about.
That quote is also funny. That quote is also funny considering how many multi-person matches he books in his shows.
That's true.
Right. It's just, you wouldn't think, like, you would say, man, I got to get Triple H into the right feud and really make him a star instead of saying, let the New Age Outlaws, like, the New Age Outlaws are going to be fine. You let Road Dogg and Billy Gunn go out there. Are you worried about them? Or are you worried about whether or not Triple H can actually fill The Rock's shoes when he goes to Hollywood? That's a big, you know what I mean? Like, I just look at it from that perspective, not just that perspective, but I think that's largely the problem, and it comes down to that because that is also true. Like, whether Vince cares about them or not, he can still say, well, why should I if it's this easy and those guys are that good already? Like, I need to get this guy up there. Those guys are good. Like, I'm not even thinking about firing them. He might fire one guy, which causes a problem. or kill guys.
Which he's done.
Guys, yeah. You know? Yeah. Okay. Well, okay. Second question. Axiom. When was the first ever time, if there was one, because I don't think there ever was, that the WWE put a mask on anyone? They take them off of people. I've never seen them put a mask on somebody.
El Vagabundo.
Maybe Max Mundo.
Isaac Yankum to Kane.
Yeah. The second scene.
Cuda Cota
Cincada.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It is not common. But yes, very weird. They took a kid, a guy that I think is, you know, a reasonably good looking dude, and put him under a mask.
And it kind of looks like Liguero's mask, only more updated, which is kind of weird.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's
yeah,
who I was
yeah,
trying to think
yeah.
of that it actually looked
yep,
like.
Yep, yep, yep.
Oh, boy. Oh, Liguero,
yeah, so
we hardly
I
knew you.
I couldn't think of a time where they had done it. I mean, because if we'd been, I mean, he's still the A-kid, I guess the A's for Axiom. I kind of like that they're not completely just throwing out everything that happened. At least they have some sort of little nod. Like, Jordan Devlin is Jordan Devlin McDonough that still got the JD in there. It's not totally just not Jordan Devlin ever again. But
still a dumb name.
It's weird that they're putting the mask on the guy. You know, like, we already know him as the A-Kid. The A stands for Axiom. And now he wears a mask? Here's my question. Does he take it off at all? Like Andrade does, you kind of used to?
Like it's an entrance mask?
Yeah.
Right, and that was Andrade's mask when he was La Sombra. That was the mask mm-hmm. all the time. and then became just an entrance mask. And you're like, why do you put a guy that handsome under a mask? devastating.
Right. You take the three of us and put us under masks.
I don't know. Last week, Bruce was saying he didn't like his name, but God, it is such a massive step up from A Kid. I don't even care. Like,
yeah, it's still a dumb name.
It can be a two, and it's still like literally infinitely better.
It sounds like an MLM.
Because A Kid was a zero.
Did you say it sounds like an MLM?
Yes.
Okay. It kind of does. It kind of does.
Well, yeah. I mean, I suppose it sounds specifically like Maxime. But
he sounds like a weird crypto.
Okay.
Yeah.
No. I want to beat up a little bit on Indy, but whatever. I don't. I think she's serviceable. I don't really have it out for her. I wanted to get to what you said about the botches. Chris Jericho was the one saying that kind of despise Jericho nowadays. He just kind of rubs me the wrong way. All that chirping about demos and stuff.
You're not alone. He's
same
annoying.
Here.
Yeah.
He's
annoying me
politically. You know, but that too, like, if you're going to be that guy, side note, if he's going to be that guy in my face about key demos, then hate to say this, and I'm not that guy because I don't care, then why don't you bring up where your wife was at? Do that then. Since you're that annoying, be all the way annoying. Don't be cute in front of the cameras and for your goofy podcast. Be MJF right now, if that's who you want to be. But stop being cute and cool and talking about key demos and you know better. You know what I'm saying? Because then you have guys running off on tangents in medium scrums talking about wars that never existed and stuff. It's just weird. And I can't deal with all of that weird stuff. But he was the guy that came up with a botch quote, and I did agree with it. Like, the lens in which we look at it through is it's just a bit much. You know, like you brought up MMA, and our job is to analyze that stuff. We might have taken – somebody's got to do it. And we took it upon ourselves to do that. We feel as if we're going to be the fair people to do that, and that's fine. I mean, maybe we are, maybe we aren't. But I think the crazy part about pro wrestling is that you got to do every job so well that if you mess one up, you know, things don't align right. So as good as Indy is with everything else, like she's telling Lash Legend to step back during an entrance and stuff, that's gold right there. That's great work right there. So you got to kind of let it slide with a botch. Like, I don't think she's good in the ring. I do think that you should give her spot to up-and-coming people. If they fail, they fail. You know, on to the next one. If Nikita Lyons don't make it, Valerie Laredo will clearly take her place. You know, hopefully they both make it. But with that said, where does Indy go from here? I know you talked about it a little bit, you touched on it, but like, do you pair up with someone else, or I would say Indy and Duke, because I was looking at a Duke Hudson. Like, what do you see Indy and Duke? That's my question. Sorry.
What I said on my recap tonight was I think that Duke, the character, has a lot of potential, and as to be a real irritating heel, maybe a mid-card gatekeeper sort of character. I don't think that he's got top-of-the-card potential right now, but I also think we kind of have what we're going to have. I think that in some ways, for me, he's one of the most main-roster-ready acts there is and could be one of those guys who's better off there than he is in NXT. And especially I would say that now because he is doing jobs and he's doing quick jobs to a lot of guys. I mean, he did the under a minute job to Breaker, and tonight he lost to Sangha in 3:01. He's not out there having these long matches, even though he's really doing a good job of promoting his matches. So I feel like you could easily move him up pretty much right now. With Indy, I just don't know. I just, in the absence of Dexter Lumis, I don't know who she's supposed to be. In the absence of love-struck Indy, we have Indy who exists. There's nothing else going on with the character. They haven't given her anything. She's just a person who wants to wrestle, which is fine. But in that case, she either has to be absolutely superlative, just absolutely a dynamo in the ring. That isn't happening. Or she has to develop something really strong as a character. And if that doesn't develop soon, if they don't have anything for her creatively, and it just feels like they don't. To me, it doesn't feel like they think they have anything with Indy. That's literally the feeling I get. I hate to say that about anyone, and I hope that I'm wrong. I hope that something is coming down the pipe for her, but I just don't know what they have. And again, I hope I'm wrong, but if they're not high on her already, and then she has that really bad botch of her own finisher, does somebody say, okay, this is the moment. It's like when somebody wants to be fired, you want to fire over sleeps, and they show up 2 hours late. You're like, perfect. Today's the day.
Yeah.
Bruce.
So I don't think we were necessarily criticizing her for having a botch, because botches happen. I think we kind of praised both her and Legend for how quickly they reacted and capitalized on what could have been a worse situation. With Hartwell, I think the spot is more likely to lead to them saying, hey, I think you should develop a new finisher, than it is for them to fire her. Because it's not just that she's serviceable. She's also pretty identifiable with NXT itself. I think more so than Dexter Lumis, more so than some of the others that were released, not just because she was part of the way, but because she played an integral role in sort of the development of them as a group and the individual characters within that group. So while we've heard that the leash is around 3 to 6 months in terms of development, I think their leash with her is a little longer, not just because of the things I brought up, but she's also something different in the women's division in that she brings size. She's tall. She is one of the taller women in the division. And aside from Lash Legend, Nikita Lyons, you don't really have too many tall women in that division to help bring a little bit of differentiation to the matchups you see, even if it's just aesthetically. So I think she'll have a place, but I do think this is a time where they'll say, hey, let's try to avoid having that happen again, so that you can continue to develop and not worrying about slipping. Let's focus on a finisher you can hit, you know, in the ring, in the mat. Maybe they'll go back to her using a spear, which isn't a good finisher for anybody, but using that or something like a bicycle kick, because she has such long legs. Just something that I think will be a bit more safe and practical, and also easier for her to land.
Big boot, Nate.
So I'm pretty much right there. I don't disagree with anything you guys said about really Indy or Duke for that matter. So I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this, but with Duke Hudson, anyway, I feel like he's probably main roster bound sooner rather than later. He's been posting stuff on social media about, you know, Maximum Male Models. And then Wade Barrett started talking about Max Dupree and Maximum Male Models during Duke Hudson's match tonight. I have a feeling we're going to see him wind up with Max Dupree on the main roster.
Are they
going to
call him Duque?
Ooh, they should. Duque.
A little umlaut over the E or something?
Sure. Yeah, something like that. Why not?
Duque. Though, right? Like Mookie? Would it be Muke? It's got to be an M, because the you know, Massey and Manfla.
I think we keep Duke, so the baby faces can call him Dookie, and then he can get really pissed off about it.
So I'm when they write this, when they write this, and we're all laughing at it, we can't say it's dumb, because we literally came out with the same idea, and we laughed at it.
Oh, we didn't say it'd be good. We just said it's an idea.
But we laugh.
It's a thing that could happen on WWE television.
Yes.
We are entertained by it, and we made a mistake by ever even saying that, because I think they bug everything, and they know everything everyone's saying. No. But my last thing is Cora Jade. This actually made me interested in her. One thing that happens when you mess up a spot, when something happens, you tend to hit the person for real to immediately sell that this is all real or that it's happening for real. That board broke and she just starts swinging on Roxanne. I'm like, damn, she's got a couple bruises somewhere at least, but it made her interesting because you can pull off a better heel promo when you're a terrible actress. Because you don't really need to act when you say, I don't care what you say or how bad. You can speak more naturally, and I think that's what a Cora Jade needs. And that's what Roman Reigns, like a lot of people need it. You guys touched on it a little bit, but how far and how long does her act go? I think she could be the next Adam Cole. Not in the ring. We know she can't get to that level, but she might be carryable to a point where she can boost a faction's she could boost the appearance of a faction and just make them all look good. I don't know. What do you guys think about that? The Adam Cole comparison at all?
Let me start by saying I wouldn't have thought of it ever. It's interesting. Let me see where I talk myself into here. Interested is such a strong word, right? I'm intrigued because this is something we have not seen literally ever in her career. I don't know if she worked heel before she was in NXT, but I didn't see any of her work before NXT, and there is not that much of it because she is very young. So I don't know what's out there. I don't know if she's done that. As an actor, as somebody who's done this for a long time, it's always funny to me when people say, hey, you don't have to act when you're in this role. And I'm like, yeah, but if you can, it'll be better. But it is true that going out there and sputtering and having a little tantrum, hissy fit, it is one of the easier things. And it's one of the first things that is asked of a lot of actors are in your first acting classes. They often don't even give you real material by actual talented dramatists. They just kind of give you situations and you kind of are creating your own character and doing stuff like that on stage. And when you are a 101 actor, one of the first things you notice is that almost everybody does an actor that's pissy and complaining and loud and whiny because it's considered to be easy. This is another reason why people say it's easier to be a heel, which is why so many people start out their careers as heels. I don't think it's any easier whatsoever to be a truly great heel than it is to be a truly great babyface. There's not as much stress on you because the babyface is supposed to draw the money. I get that. But to be like literally in the top echelon, I feel like is the same level, but you can more easily make a young person a heel than you can a baby face. So I'm definitely intrigued in what they're going to get out of this, because 2 months ago I would have said if Cora's baby face act doesn't work, I mean, that's all she's got. This is not a heel. This is not a person who can be a heel. I've been wrong about a couple of people like that before where they stepped into a role and I was stunned at how well it worked. But color me a little doubtful on Cora. I'm interested to see what develops, but there's a lot of work to be done. Although, if she has the power to break, I'm not going to harp on the damn skateboard, to break a skateboard without hitting it against anything, then maybe.
Did you see her? did you see her becoming an Alexa Bliss? Oh, no, she broke that board beforehand. She gave away that she was going to break it when she came out because she was holding it at that point. She broke it backstage, or it broke backstage. Yeah. I can tell immediately. Nobody holds
it. It was gimmicked, absolutely.
In the middle like that.
Was, yeah.
You know? My son just got some Legos for his birthday. I know how you have to hold something when it's about to break into pieces. Okay? Like, I know this.
Yep.
I just fixed it today. It broke backstage into two pieces. Two completely separate pieces, but she was keeping that together with her hands. But so Alexa Bliss is somebody who started off, thought she was probably going to be the good girl, maybe, or maybe she was going to be a baby face, maybe by the general nature of her character, but she ended up being a natural heel. Do you see maybe if not an Adam Cole, maybe Alexa Bliss vibes from her?
It is stunning you brought her up because Alexa is who that's her best case scenario. And that's literally where I was going to go next with what I talked about, because we are in doing NXT 8 years back with Tom Staupe. We are just a couple of months into Alexa's first appearance. She shows up and she's basically a pixie.
Glitter test.
Yeah, she's like, she looks like she sneezed in cocaine. She's covered in, didn't know I was going to say that on the show today.
Yeah, I think that's
she,
my fault. I'm sorry.
I'm
a negative
is,
influence in this place.
Our positive? She is one where I wouldn't have guessed because she's got such a naturally sweet look. It carries herself that way and seems to be in life really just that sweet and likable. So when she started that act and when she teamed with Blake and Murphy, it was a real revelation. And then she got into the ring again. And I said, this is the most improved in a short amount of time I've seen a wrestler almost ever. It was very, very quick. Her ability to step in and to do, little things that were so much fun, like insult to injury. If Cora can develop anywhere near as well and in the same style as Alexa Bliss, I think that's the blueprint. That is the absolute blueprint, Bruce.
I think what she's going to hit is Mandy Rose. That's probably going to be her limit. Which I guess is an NXT Women's Champion, even though, Cora Jade is interesting. There's that word again. Just because I've made my feelings about her known before on this pod, well, or on this post show many times. She just doesn't do much for me, both with her character and with her in-ring abilities. This is definitely a chance to make me look stupid and change things, but I'm not completely sold. I think the Alexa Bliss as the ceiling is probably accurate, but Alexa Bliss also even at that time, back in the day, years back, she still has some more of the little things down that Cora Jade, even with more wrestling experience, kind of doesn't have. And I'm speaking more specifically about things in the ring. And while we're stuck on Alexa Bliss 8 years ago, it's interesting because that's also the time that Stardust and Goldust were teaming. And I said, hey, bring Alexa Bliss up and make them glitter dust or some shit. So there's that. I do think that Mandy Rose is more accurate because they tried making her a face, and then she teamed with DeVille, and then they tried to make her a face again with the whole Otis angle, and then she's back in NXT as a heel, and she's having the most success in her career as a heel. But the other thing with Bliss, too, is that from that time of improvement, not much has changed, I would say, with Alexa Bliss in terms of at least in-ring. So there is a bit of plateauing. And with Jade, I just don't know how much more there is to go with her in terms of how much more can she grow. Whereas when I look at Roxanne Perez, and I definitely see that there is much more room for her, even though she's more polished, that she still has ample room to, maybe I just believe in her potential more to accomplish new things and improve more in the ring in terms of the presentation than I do Cora Jade, just because of what I've seen thus far. So I'm not as high on her as – and I know you two – go ahead.
Would you say that Cora Jade's holding back? Because she's very scripted, very like not like she's scared of being fired, but like she just wants to do so well. You know, do you think that she's just holding back and hasn't let go yet? Because it seems like somebody told Alexa, hey, we're going to fire you next week unless you get it together. And she was like, you know what? I don't even care. And that's literally how she came out. And she was, right. But that's how it happens. Sometimes I don't even care no more. I'll just do whatever. And do you think that's what it is, Bruce?
I have gotten a feel of a fear of failure and a fear of really spreading her wings, both from her. I've gotten a tentativeness since the beginning. Bruce, continue.
So I've said on I don't know if I said it on here, but I know I've said it on at least one or two of the Torch shows before that I'm a millennial, and then the generation after me, Gen Z, and we are, I think, the generations and the ones after us that are most stricken by anxiety based off of a fear of failure, which I believe inhibits the potential of a lot of us because we're just too afraid to try, because we don't want to fail, because so many things in our society has told us that failure means you suck and you're worthless and all these good things, right? Or bad things, not good things, all these things. And sure, there's probably some of that, but then there's also a lot of people where that doesn't affect them. Look, if she's holding back, then I think she needs to look at someone like Thea Hale, who's not holding back at all, and just try and take an example from that, or Tiffany Stratton, who's not holding back at all. Wendy Chu is given a crappy gimmick and is not holding back. I think if there isn't, I hope there's more, but if there isn't any more than this, then I don't think that I just don't see much more beyond what she's giving right now. And hopefully I'm wrong, and hopefully she really just knocks it out of the park with this heel character. I do think that someone she might want to study in terms of going from the uber baby face to heel at NXT is Kelly's favorite in Dakota Kai, and watching her transformation and how she, not the sort of devolved character or the deranged character, but after she first turned heel on Tegan Nox and sort of that journey she went on. I think if she were to try and emulate that a bit, more in terms of the mannerisms, the facial expressions, the psychology, then I think that would do a lot in terms of helping her advance her character as this heel moving forward in hopes of gaining the NXT championship, which we haven't even discussed the fact that she threw away one title to try and go for another title. So,
Nate? Yeah, there's a lot we're talking about here. So Cora Jade, I don't even think she needs – well, I mean, okay, definitely study up on the tape of Dakota Kai, because that was – Dakota Kai did a fantastic job there. But I don't even think she has to go that far. All she probably has to do is walk around backstage a bit and find Grayson Waller. When he turned heel, I mean, his babyface run initially was just terrible. I mean, he was – I kept calling him like the other Austin Theory, because like Austin Theory had just left. He kind of sort of looks like him. And he really wasn't doing much of note at all. And then he turned heel, and oh my God, it was like the switch flipped, and his promos were better. He felt more, it seemed like he was much more comfortable in the ring. Carmelo Hayes, same thing, you know, he turned heel and all of a sudden, boom, you know, he found his character. So maybe it's the same for Cora Jade. Maybe one of the reasons that, you know, we kind of all think that she's so, you know, tepid and whatnot is she doesn't feel comfortable as a face, or she doesn't feel comfortable doing what she's doing. And maybe kind of being able to essentially role play an asshole might wind up getting her to come out of her shell. You know, it's kind of one of the things, like, and I hate to take this from one of my shows and bring it to the other one of my shows, but one of the things that we talk about on Deejays and Dragons is, you know, basically one of the biggest things to talk about Deejays and Dragons is starting to role play as somebody else to kind of, you know, forget your everyday normal life, a bit of an escape, you know, and, but not only that, if you are kind of role-playing as somebody else, you're not necessarily you, you start to think about, okay, what does that character do? How is that character going to react? And you can kind of start getting out of your comfort zone, out of your shell, and start, you know, succeeding at what you're doing a little bit more, whether it be in a role-playing game or here in wrestling. So I'm kind of willing to give her the benefit of the doubt. Now, granted, I do that a lot with a lot of things and a lot of people in my life. So, hey, maybe I should, maybe I shouldn't, but I'm willing to give her the benefit of the doubt. you know, she's there's something there. I just don't know if we've seen it yet. And I'm kind of hoping this heel turn for her is what it is.
Real quick. One of you brought up her size. Now I got a question. Would her size be irrelevant if she wrestled like a Pete Dunne and she focused on things like that? Because she's still, to me, like, her heel character is a bitch that wrestles like Pete Dunne. Like, she's a mean girl, and she's just real dirty, like Pete Dunne is real dirty. Do you think that would be a route you could go with her?
I think that would be I'm fully on in favor of that. I mean, it's a lot of work to have somebody change their moveset on the fly. But if she's up for that, that would be probably one of the most exciting changes that she could make in a week's time that we could see next week. And it wouldn't be in a week's time. It would be something they've been working on for weeks already in preparation for this, because clearly this heel turn has been in the works for at the very least a month.
We've been talking about this since well before they teamed up. I mean, going back to the vignettes where they were messing with Dolan and Jane on the beach.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was Wendy Chu.
Wendy Chu, right. But even then, we've been seeing this coming since they pretty much dropped the whole best friends thing, the first promo they had together.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you don't say that unless you're going to try to get heat out of splitting them apart. I guess that's where we are with that. And I think we'll talk some final matches here. But as always, thank you, Sean. And we will talk to you probably.
Appreciate you guys. Take it easy.
Yeah. Good time. Okay. So we got a few other matches we didn't touch on and a few segments. Tatum Paxley over Caden Carter in 3:31. I liked this. This was just a small dose of wrestling, but I thought it went very well. I'm high on Paxley. I have been for some time. I like her look. I like her, the way she carries herself, and she does seem to be double tough. That final reversal was Giovanni Vinci-ian in its power display. I mean, perhaps not to that level, but good stuff. And yeah, would be interesting to see two women in the Diamond Mine faction, depending on what that Diamond Mine faction is going to be, because you could see Roddy getting beat out of it, or Roddy beating somebody out of it, or kicking somebody out of it. I don't know. We got
a gang. Jump out
yeah.
or something? Jump in.
Oh, yeah. You know, one of my friends was in a gang when I was young, so I say get beat out of it all the time. And people are like, what? Were you in a gang? I'm like, no. I just knew a guy. Song over Duke Hudson in 301. We more or less covered both guys. Solo Sikoa and Von Wagner. What's better than one match with these guys? Oh, two.
I forgot this happened.
10 minutes and 26 seconds. That was your crossover main event. It's the match you would expect them to have. It was very, very slow paced, lots of power stuff. A few no sells sprinkled in, especially with Solo Sikoa in his head, because we've gone back to those heads being hard, whatever. But yes, we are going to get more of this. There was a big outside segment where they fought until Mr. Stone was thrown into a WWE branded trash bin. And he said, it's too bad this wasn't a dumpster trash bin. Those things are top of the line. And then D and Stax defeated Idris Enofe and Malik Blade in 5 minutes and 24 seconds. I don't know what else to say about Tony D that I haven't said before. He just sucks the life out of every match that he's in. But otherwise, this was pretty fine. when it was the other guys. And it's just the means to keep moving toward Walking Wild and Cruz del Toro, and of course Santos Escobar gaining their freedom again. Nate.
All right, so we're talking about all of them.
I mean, you don't have to talk about any of them. They're not required.
Okay.
The past, I would throw to you and be like, yeah, we'll just put those together to keep them short. And you'd go for an hour. And I'd be like, well, not really what I was looking for.
Yeah,
but
that's true. That's true.
Yeah.
I've gotten better over the years, you know. I can't believe I can actually say years at this point, too. All right. So let's start with Sokoa and Wagner. This is actually a match I was kind of looking forward to since, like, from the moment they announced it earlier. I think it was earlier in the night. And not because I really wanted to see Von Wagner wrestle, but because Solo Sikoa is one of the most polished and protected acts in NXT, and Von Wagner is, well, not the most polished, but he's certainly one of the more protected acts in NXT as well. So I was really wondering how they were going to get out of this. I really didn't think there was going to be a pinfall at all here, but I was curious. I was thinking, you know, maybe somebody like Robert Stone interferes or, you know, something along those lines. And, you know, Von Wagner winds up with the win or some, you know, something like that. There's some sort of shenanigans that happen where one would wind up going over the other. But I didn't think that was necessarily going to be the case. I had a feeling there was going to be some sort of, you know, DQ finish or, you know, maybe a double count out after that. God, stupid finish last night. Bianca Belair kind of reminded me, you know, I got started thinking maybe double count out. But I wasn't necessarily, well, I guess it was a double count out here tonight. But I wasn't necessarily expecting like a giant brawl all over the arena for like the next 20 minutes. It was certainly enjoyable. I'm wondering what they're going to be doing with Solo Sikoa. If, you know, he's going to wind up, you know, becoming maybe, you know, we were talking about this with Zach last night maybe Solo Sikoa goes up and becomes a special guest referee in that Bloodline versus Bloodline and Riddle match. But maybe, the, you know, something like that. So it's like, I'm curious to see what they do with him. I feel like they could just pluck him right out of the developmental, put him in the main roster, and he, especially with his family, I feel like he'd be perfect. He'd be completely fine up there. But yeah, it was a good match. Kind of curious to see where this goes. The WWE branded dumpster was hilarious. Like, they even put the NXT stupid, like, tie-dye stuff on the stickers on the side of it. I guess maybe you got to cover up brand names or something, but whatever happened to duct tape? We talked about Indy Hartwell and Legend. D'Angelo Stacks versus Idris Nofi Malik Blade. It was certainly a short match, but it was really mostly to kind of showcase D'Angelo Stacks and Legado del Fantasma. I want to know what is going on with Santos Escobar. Cause like, yeah, obviously a couple weeks ago he was supposedly beaten down and we saw a picture on a cell phone of him in the hospital bed and all that. But I'm kind of curious, like, what happens when he comes back? Is he going to be all up in arms? Which I'm assuming he's going to be. Is he going to be all up in arms that, you know, he got beat up, try to take over Tony D'Angelo's spot and just kind of reignite that feud? I'm kind of hoping that's where it winds up going. And then we see Legado go over and D'Angelo kind of get his comeuppance. I think that would be kind of cool. What else do we have? What other match did I not hit? Oh, Sanga and Duke Hudson. And then Tatum Paxley and Caden Carter. So Sanga, I've talked a little bit about Duke Hudson a bit tonight. Sanga, we again talking about him last week. I'm kind of like, I'm starting to get on board with Sanga. He's certainly, you know, there's something to be desired on the mic. I don't know if it's, you know, a language barrier type of thing, which it probably is to at least to some degree. I'm starting to like him a little bit more in the ring. I love the fact that he's using a chokeslam as a finisher. Chokeslam is stupid of a move as it is. It's one of my favorites. Like, I absolutely love a good choke slam. So it's good to see somebody using it again. And I also, like we were talking about his gimmick his attire change. I feel like that's also a step in the right direction for him. He could be a big man, kind of big man gatekeeper, like almost like kind of like what Braun Strowman turned into, or, you know, Kane or something like that. If he keeps his nose clean and he stays, he's booked correctly and you know, people don't necessarily lose faith in him. But so that was kind of what I thought about that there. And then Paxley and Carter, like you said, Kelly, is certainly a short match. I think you said about like 3 minutes or something like that. But it really wasn't bad. It wasn't a bad match at all. It's fun to see Caden Carter like in a singles match. We don't really get to see her singles very often. Granted, you know, it's only a 3 minute match. It's like, you know, how much can you really showcase in 3 minutes? But it's kind of nice to see her doing some singles stuff. Tatum Paxley and Ivy Nile, I think they actually have some really good chemistry together, which is surprising to me because they're like total opposites, like in kind of like their demeanor and things. But I don't know, there's something about the two of them on screen. I'm not saying I'm like over the moon about it, like, you know, give me 15 minutes of these two, but I think there's something there. And I'm also curious to see what winds up panning out with Tatum Paxley if she winds up joining this faction, Diamond Mine, that's already like imploding from the inside out. Heck, we didn't even see, the Creed brothers are so fed up with this implosion of Diamond Mine, they didn't even show up tonight. And they're the tag champions.
Yeah, they did. They did.
Where the hell were they?
Well, they were in that scene with
Damon Kemp.
Damon Kemp, and watching their film from last week.
Oh, yeah, they were. Okay, yeah, all right, I take that back. I guess they were. I completely forgot about that. It did happen. So, yeah, that's all I get to say about that.
All right, go ahead, Bruce.
Excuse me. So it just hit me that Sangha in his new gear reminds me of Dan Severn back in the day when he would do MMA and pro wrestling. See, so there's that. When it comes to Tatum Paxley and Caden Carter, so like Kelly, I've been high on Paxley. So I kind of consider Paxley to be in the same group as like the Sloane Jacobs, the Kiana Jameses, the Kayla Inlay, or that's the same person, the Fallon Henleys of the world. And ever since they kind of started making their appearances, and especially when the women's breakout tournament was announced, Tatum Paxley has been the person I've been highest on. And I think each time she appears, she improves. And tonight was another step in that direction. And I do think that with Tatum Paxley, there is more potential in her as an act and as a wrestler, I think, than someone like a Sloane Jacobs or a Kiana James or a Fallon Henley, who is getting a lot of time, because it seems like Tatum Paxley has a more, it just seems like she's more comfortable in how she presents her character. And it seems more like how the person that she's presenting is more closely resembles kind of who she, or how she really acts outside of her wrestling. So I think that helps a bit, but she also seems to have more of a developed in-game or in-ring repertoire than the other women thus far in kind of her similar class, outside of Roxanne Perez, of course. So I'm high on Paxley, and I'm hoping that what happens with her and Nile might be that they become, I mean, we're just talking about the tag team titles on the way, but it seems like they're going to become a solid tag team, or at least a duo that can tag but maybe supports each other as singles wrestlers. And on the whole Diamond Mine thing, when Roderick Strong said he was facing Damon Kemp next week, I just said, okay, thank you, I will be there and I am watching that and I will not miss a second of that, unless of course they go into commercial. But that is going to be a one hell of a match. Did I miss the Von Wagner Solo Sikoa thing? I forgot that actually happened, so that's probably not a good thing in terms of. That's probably Von Wagner was in it, but I actually completely forgot that that match happened, and everything that happened afterwards with it. For the other thing that I wanted to discuss that we haven't brought up yet is the Carmelo Hayes Trick Williams segment where the Mae champion and Trick were out there with four women and going to a balcony and doing all that. And while I was watching, especially when those two were standing on the balcony looking over top, I just went, the theme that's popping to my head
the
right
wire.
Now, over and
the
over.
The wire, right?
Exactly. Avon, yes. Avon and Stringer standing on the balcony looking over. I said, this is exactly the only thing I'm thinking about right now. And, well, I guess I don't know if any of the people that are on the writing team watch The Wire, but if they do actually end up having some kind of breakup and Trick turns on Carmelo, I'm going to come right back to that tweet and be like, I told you it was Stringer and Avon. I told you. So yeah, I do think that, aside from the connotations, or I guess the homage to The Wire, that was a good scene in terms of how it presented them again as top of the line A champions who think that they're the best and they have the women with them. There was one woman specifically who actually had lines and worked kind of in the vignette they aired. So I think this is just another indication of Carmelo Hayes, Trick Williams. They know who they are. They know their characters. They know that they are the top of NXT, and this, I think, was a good presentation for the two of them. So, again, The Wire is what I got from it, and if they do go there, I think kudos to them for using that slight, like, it was 5 seconds or so that they were on the rooftop overlooking things together. Just that little bit. If it does end up happening, then I will give them applause for that, because I was not the only one thinking about that.
Yeah, I should have known you tweeted about it. I was going to put it in my recap, and I'm like, how annoyingly highbrow is this? Like, nobody's going to remember this moment, and like, nobody, yeah, I immediately thought it, and I was like, oh no, they've just realized they're going to try to kill each other. Oh, just like Stringer and Avon. Okay. Well, all right. If you guys want to cover any of the other stuff, you can. But otherwise, I'm just going to go to the emails, and we are going to get on out of here. This is from Brian Alston. Brian from Phoenix, longtime Torch VIP subscriber. Hello, friends. If Kelly's on, repeat after me. Brooks Jensen. Brooks Jensen.
Brooks Jensen. Brooks Jensen.
Brooks Jensen. Brooks Jensen. Brooks Jensen.
Briggs Jensen.
He said Briggs the fourth time, Nate. You screwed it up. Talking. Oh, this
well, you said repeat after me.
Nate, you've been... It said if Kelly is on, clown juice, I'm the Kelly. Then he misspelled Tommaso, but that's something that happens, because why? Why is it spelled that way? Because it's actually spelled that way. I get it. But question, Tommaso Ciampa, rhymes with Tampa, is arguably the greatest NXT wrestler of all time. What do you think of his Raw run so far? Last night, he got his first extended talking segment. Being linked with The Miz is not too bad. However, The Miz doesn't have a good track record of elevating others. See Alex Riley, Damian Sandow, Curtis Axel, Bo Dallas, John Morrison. I think Morrison did pretty damn well, although I am somebody who thinks that Morrison was woefully underpushed by that company. And Mandy Rose retains. He did type this before the show. Yes, that is correct. For the reasons we thought it might happen last week. Remember to go VIP and then listen to Saturday's NXT 8 years back, where Kelly and Tom Stout reviewed the July 16th, 2014 edition of NXT. Plus, there's a movie trivia question about friendship. Go Chase University. Thanks, Brian Alston. Anything on his email, Nate?
All right. So actually, it's kind of funny you bring this up, Brian. And hey, I'm sorry that I screwed up your joke by trying to be humorous. Sorry, my type of humor sometimes backfires. Anyway, last night I was talking about Ciampa with Zach a little bit. You know, we were talking about people that you could kind of strap a rocket to and turn into a star right now, especially in a place where there's just so many injuries. And you know, the person that I brought up was Ciampa. He was so beloved down here in NXT. You know, he's probably my favorite wrestler right now, period. He's probably my number one right now. And that's because of everything he did down in NXT, the DIY stuff that he had with Johnny Gargano, all the way to Goldie. And then, you know, his final run, even with Bron Breakker, which was, you know, bittersweet because, you know, it wasn't a bad story, but like I knew he was going away and he was going up the main roster, and you know, we weren't going to get the same Ciampa that we got down in NXT. I think if you were to let Ciampa run with, like, give him the ball and let him run with it, I think he could be a huge star up on the main roster. I don't know. I think, like, his age might be a hindrance right now. You know, and obviously his injury, it's a list of injuries over the years, neck injuries and things like that. So they may, you know, it's possible they may not want to put an investment into him because of all of that. But I think if you're looking to put somebody in, preferably a heel role, but there's so many heels on Raw right now, you really need a face. If you're able to build him up to be a face and let him, I mean, he's got charisma for days and he knows how to get a crowd on his side or against him for that matter. It depends on what he's doing, but he knows how to get a crowd on his side. I really think that he could be amazing on Raw. His Raw run so far has been, for me, relatively lackluster. I also don't watch Raw week to week. I kind of, you know, if I know there's, you know, I'll start watching it right before pay-per-view, like maybe a week before pay-per-view, usually keep up with it through PW Torch content. Or if I know that I'm going to need to do a podcast, like obviously I'll, you know, watch the week before or something like that. But it's been pretty lackluster. Last night, I was actually pretty... he came out with The Miz and I was actually like, all right, this could be a good thing for him. It could give him some, obviously it's going to give him some more TV time, but you know, they're maybe giving him a bit of a push. They're putting him with somebody that's, I mean, obviously Miz is a big star. He's got his own TV show, you know, spinoff of, you know, WWE, whatever. So, but I do have to, you know, I do have to admit, he does not have a good record of elevating other people. John Morrison, I kind of have to disagree with Brian points out John Morrison. I got to disagree a little bit there, but especially with their original run, their latest run was a little weird, but whatever. But yeah, overall, like I think this is going to be a good place for him. I don't think The Miz is a bad person to necessarily pair him with, because, I mean, The Miz is great, which, again, is a sentence I never thought I would say like 5 or 6 years ago, but probably longer than that at this point. But Miz is good, so you know, put him with The Miz, and we'll see what winds up happening with him. But I really think if they were to give him the ball, let him run with it, he could easily jump into one of those, you know, vacant spots right now. You know, maybe not necessarily be Cody Rhodes popular, but be a decent replacement for Cody Rhodes until, you know, Cody Rhodes is able to come back.
Bruce, anything on this one?
I do think what works in Ciampa's favor here is that most of the other wrestlers who were paired with The Miz happen to be wrestlers who they really didn't know what else to do with after a time or trying to find something else for them. Whereas Ciampa, this is really his first, I mean, yeah, he came up to Raw and SmackDown with Gargano Black and there was one other person they killed, the foursome, Ricochet, I think it was. And they had a little brief stint before they came back down when Triple H, or when Vince was kind of like, oh yeah, I'm going to just use them real quick and blown up storylines in NXT real quick, because I think that's when Ciampa and Gargano were feuding as well. But beyond that, he really hasn't had much exposure to people on Raw. So I think at least the positive is that even if The Miz's track record hasn't been the best in terms of quote-unquote elevating those who have been paired with him, this might be okay because The Miz is one of the more, I mean, polarizing, I guess, to a certain extent, acts in WWE, but he also has a lot of cachet to long-term fans because of his accomplishments, how long he's been around, and especially if you've been there from the beginning of his career, a begrudging respect from where he was when he began his career to how far he's come. So I think he'll do fine in that regard moving forward. It just, with Ciampa, he is a bit up there in age, but we know in pro wrestling right now, especially right now, you could be in your mid-40s and have the best run of your career, like a Bobby Lashley the last year and a half or two, for example. You look at Brock Lesnar and whatnot. So that can happen. But Ciampa also had a history of injuries that can hold him back. But I think if we're just looking at it specifically because through his partnership with The Miz, that, you know, the whole Sandow thing, Mizdow thing, that was more in the follow-up was a failure. But I think the pairing was very successful. So I think this can be a net benefit for Tommaso Ciampa.
Our other email comes from Kevin Catani. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you all well. The Catanis are busy prepping for our girls' first trip to Disney. I can't wait to see their reactions. That said, I saw a report earlier today that saying that WWE has some big things in store for Nikita Lyons. What do you think her ceiling in the company is? And how would you compare it to someone like Roxanne Perez, who comes with significant experience and already has an NXT title? Poorly. Thanks, as always. Go VIP and listen to 8YB. Office hours are now over. The professor, Kevin P. Catani, PhD. I'm not surprised to learn they have big plans for her. It's always clear when they do, because even if that person isn't any good, the announcers all have to talk about how good they are and how big that a future they have. And I'm like, nothing this person is doing, no part of their act suggests that's true. But if you're hearing it from the mouthpieces of the company, they want you to think that it is true. I don't want to be overly tough on her this week, because I thought her mic work was a significant step up from where it was. Like, she's not a dynamo, but this week was much more natural and much more real than she has been, even as recently as last week or the last time she talked with Mike, which might have been 2 weeks. I don't remember. So I don't want to harp on it that much this particular week. Her ceiling is absolutely main roster champion. I don't think she warrants that at all. And if it does happen, unless significant strides are made first, I will say, well, this is stupid because she's not good. But I think that there's a good chance she will be pushed to that level, whether she gets good or not. And I hope that it is not too much too soon. And you've got somebody who's being asked to work 15, 18 minute pay-per-view matches who simply isn't up to the task, and potentially could hurt people if she's not. I compare her poorly to Roxanne. I'm not as high on Roxanne as some. I like her, but I think her acting is also kind of a black hole. And as a wrestler, she's not quite as polished as I expected based on the hype she came in with. I think that I'm high on her eventually, but I'm not feeling like it's there now. I think she would absolutely sink to the bottom of the ocean if she went to the main roster right now. She's got time to spend there. So thanks so much for ending my night with Nikita Lyons. Kevin.
Yeah, right.
Bruce.
Her ceiling is whatever the company wants her ceiling to be. And it wouldn't surprise me if they put her on the Becky Lynch path once she hits the main roster or Raw or SmackDown, because it seems like that's what they see in her. That's not what I see in her, but that seems like what they see in her. What was the last thing you said before you the whole ending the night with Nikita Lyons? That thing just threw me off.
Roxanne Perez.
Yep. Oh, so with Roxanne Perez, I do think one thing that may have helped her not meet your expectations is that when she was in ROH specifically, the women that she was wrestling did have more experience than who she has been paired with in NXT. And so while she's polished and it came off well, she may not have had as much experience in terms of leading matches. And so I think a little bit of that has shown here. And again, but she's also wrestling with people who don't have as much experience as those who she was working with for the most part, you know, in ROH and on the indies. So there could be some of that. I don't think there's any doubt that the next NXT Women's Champion is Nikita Lyons. That is going to be interesting. You did say her promo was better tonight, but that was a very self-contained, short thing. I'm not sure if she can be out there kicking off a show or holding off the top of the hour.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised her best piece was in a backstage segment because they got as many shots at that as they want.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Speaking of shots, they definitely place her shot backstage very strategically. I'll leave it at that. I'm not very high on Nikita Lyons. If I had to pick between, you know, Nikita Lyons and Lash Legend, we always compare those two because they kind of have the same timing focus on them. I would pick Lash Legend. But there's just something that they see in her, and I'm pretty sure I know what they see, but it's, you know, she is undoubtedly going to be a champion in NXT, a champion on Raw or SmackDown or both, and probably a multi-time champion. Unless she just, you know, injuries can befall her. She can mess up doing something. She might lose passion for the business. You know, anything can come up. But if she just stays as she is, then I don't see any way that she doesn't hit what Kelly said she's going to do.
And Nate?
Ditto.
All righty, folks. Not the greatest color man in the business for nothing. So
two straight weeks you said that, I think.
I love
three, two and three.
Say that. Yep. Give me a reason. I will do it every time. All right. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at SpookyMilk.games. Nate.
All right. At Nate Lindberg. And I do the NXT hits and misses, which you can find on PWTorch.com. I've got the one for tonight up. So let me know what you think of it. But don't find my personal email address and tell me what you think about it. Actually, quick disclaimer, never seek out somebody's personal email address and start berating them. That's just a bad idea.
It's
you know
really
who you
weird.
Are.
Weird.
You know who you are.
Weird behavior.
You know what I'm talking about. But it's, yeah, just saying. Just saying.
Bruce.
Ditto what Nate said. I am Bruce Lee Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253.
All right, folks. Cheers, and we will see you in 7. Should have talked about Cameron Grimes saying motherfucker on the show.